Blog Talk Radio.
Tried to educate others, lobbied, and volunteered.
Yet throughout all of these things, I have felt the frustration of being up against the outrageous power of the coal industry. We do not live within a democracy, but within a plutocracy, a government increasingly controlled by economic interests, by state and multinational corporations. Indeed, the results of a poll conducted by Lake Research Partners and Bellwether Research and Consulting and released earlier this week found that Virginians actually oppose mountaintop removal mining by a margin of 45-31. The Coal River watershed has been decimated by strip mining and mountaintop removal. Nearly a quarter of a total land area in the watershed is being mined or permitted to be mined in the future, including over 5,000 acres of Coal River Mountain. Across central Appalachia, more than 1.2 million acres have been stripped for coal. Recent studies have documented connections between strip mining and a range of health impacts, including birth defects and cancer. Some local residents have expressed strong support for the tree sit. I commend Catherine Ann for her strength and determination to stay in that tree for a month to halt blasting around the Bushy Fork impoundment, said Debbie Jarrell, a lifelong resident of the Rock Creek, West Virginia. It's the youth of today that will stop the short-sightedness of mountaintop removal that my generation has allowed.
Yeah. So you go to RAMPS, R-A-M-P-S, you know, Radical Action for Mountain People's Survival. And I thank Gail for sending me that.
And alerting us to those concerns.
Very good. And let's see. Hang on one second here. I don't know if anybody knows this, but this is something new that came up. And I didn't hear about this recently, but 27 soldiers were just blown to hell the other day, you know, in Afghanistan. And it's like, you know, 31 were blown to hell in a helicopter the week before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like we don't realize what... We're not getting this kind of news, you know what I mean? And
or
if we are, it's so blasé.
Or it's given very dismissively.
Right. A powerful explosion has rocked a U.S. military base in eastern Afghanistan and reportedly killed at least 27 American soldiers and left dozens wounded. Now, that wasn't on the news. We just watched this, and it wasn't on... This happened a couple of days ago, but this was reported... Actually, it was reported last week on the 18th, but... very, very light, taken very lightly. And the incident occurred early Thursday when a truck bomb went off inside the U.S. military base in Gardez City, in the capital of Afghanistan's Pattaya province. According to the Taliban spokesman, the truck contained hundreds of kilos of explosives. Witnesses say that the explosion was very powerful, and a U.S. helicopter was also destroyed in the blast. American forces in Afghanistan have been experiencing their deadliest days since the beginning of August. Now, on August 6th, at least 31 U.S. special forces were killed after Taliban militants shot an American helicopter belonging to NATO's International Security Force. It just happened to be the guys who supposedly killed bin Laden.
Osama.
Yeah, it was too convenient a way to go, I'll tell you. And the death toll was the biggest in a single incident for foreign forces since the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan began in 2001. And in another attack on August 11th, ISAF said in a statement that six U.S. soldiers lost their lives following the explosion of a roadside bomb in a volatile southern Afghanistan. And the security situation remains fragile in Afghanistan, despite the presence of 150,000 U.S.-led foreign forces in a war-torn country. And the increasing numbers of troop casualties in Afghanistan has caused widespread anger in the U.S. and other NATO member states, including undermining public support of the Afghan war. Well, that's true, okay, but the only people that really have heard about this or, you know, are really upset, you know, are the people whose families that you know, have been ruined by this, you know. And it's just a horrible situation.
And say nothing of the number of Afghanis, innocent Afghan people that have been killed.
And this is by Press TV. Now, after that, I wanted to spend a few minutes on this one. because this is like about as low as it goes, is the Pentagon wants to cut pensions for veterans.
Now that they've been used.
Yeah.
They don't need them anymore.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, this
join the rest of the poor people.
Yeah. Well, the poor people, huh? You know, half these guys are on disability and everything else, and now these guys want to be cut. All right.
With the Pentagon looking for new ways to cut back on costs, a report released this week presents a plan to save $250 billion over the next two decades. All they have to do is take away retirement plans from veterans. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta said Tuesday that any large cuts in defense spending would terribly weaken the national security of the U.S. This is not about the Defense Department or the State Department, Panetta told reporters. This is about the United States of America. That being said, the DoDo doesn't plan on curbing the $115 billion it will spend on rust-proofing their fleets during the next 5 years. Sure, the Pentagon announced this week that they would be investigating the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, to make sure they aren't abusing the government funding that makes up their multi-million dollar contract. And yes, last week also saw the Falcon Hypersonic Technology Vehicle 2 unmanned aircraft lose contact with military operators after the Pentagon had put $300 million into the project. Those operations will continue. Benefits, however, will not. Under current military procedure, U.S. vets stand to receive a retirement income of half of their salary after completing 20 years of service in the armed forces. A 24-page presentation outlined this week, however, proposes something drastically different. Under the New Deal, the modernizing the military retirement system would put in place a 401k-style plan that would offer government contributions once vets reach regular retirement age. While the new initiative will open benefits up to those who serve less than 20 years and currently out in the cold if they part ways with the Pentagon before that, vets with lengthy tenures with the Department of Defense stand to receive substantially less. If you want to maintain the core mission, which is defend the nation and have the strategic capabilities we need, we can't have all the money tied up in retirement programs, says former Congressional Budget Office Director Douglas Holtz-Aiken, reports the Daily Mail. Holtz-Aiken says the new plan would save the U.S. a fortune over the next 20 years as the Pentagon is aiming to cut around $400 billion in spending. In the meantime, however, some are worried that the new plan might discourage Americans from enlisting. My main concern is it might change the whole outlook of people wanting to join the service, veteran Danny Seaman tells WBOC 16. Panetta, meanwhile, says, we need to have a responsible conversation about how we're going to prepare ourselves for the future. Wednesday also saw the competition of the 50th centrifuge. The completion, I think that's supposed to be. I also saw that it says competition.
Yeah.
Completion of the
Center
fuselage for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, manufactured by the Northrop Grumman Corporation for the Pentagon. That would all be fine and dandy if all 20 of the aircraft weren't currently grounded. Let's just hope they aren't gathering any rust while sitting around. That's a bill that's high enough as it is.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, this is something, this is from breaking news,
yeah.
But this is something that really disgusts me, only because, on several levels, but primarily because this is either they're planning to start a draft,
mm-hmm.
and they don't give a shit about the volunteer business anymore, all right? Or,
that's a
major thought, or they just don't give a shit about the veterans anyway. You know, and they just want to cut benefits. I mean, it's pretty sick deal. But, yeah, that's the new switchboard.
Where's the call?
Yeah.
Oh, people call right there.
Yeah,
oh, different switchboard.
In fact, we do have a call. Surprisingly, let's see who that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, hello, caller. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
Well, who's
this? How are you all doing?
Oh,
sorry?
We're doing very well, thank you. And who's calling, please? What's your name?
Let's just call me Mr. X.
Okay.
All right,
Mr. X. All right,
Mr. X. I wanted to make some comments. I don't know if this fits within what you all want to or have been discussing, but I'm sure at some point it will, because what I want to talk about is the state of affairs of this country. And I think that virtually no one is addressing the real issues. Most people who think that they are actually being fooled. They're actually have been made puppets by the same elites who seek to destroy the working class people. Perfect example, obvious example, would be the Tea Party, for instance.
Well, that's an organization that's been hijacked. Originally, they had some pretty good thoughts, but that's been hijacked. Just like
The problem with the Tea Party, if I could, as well as everyone else who is ticked off, frustrated, and feels their country being taken away from them, the problem is that they don't have at their side unbiased experts to help them form policy issues. And so as a result, they take particular stances on things based upon what they hear from the media, for instance, health care. As a result, virtually no one that's not an industry expert understands the problems and the solutions for the healthcare industry. They go by the back and forth opposition, which is related to the two-party system that we have in this country. They go by what they tell us. And the fact is our two-party system is really the same. It's a one party. It's a fascist government. And it has been for a long time. All one has to do is to look at over the decades, what has happened. Living standards have continued to decline. Both parties advocate this unfair system of trade, which forces jobs overseas. Both parties advocate any health care bills that always favor the industry, despite what people think. For instance, the Obamacare actually favors the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So this is the problem, is that when people are not, and I speak as an expert, and it's frustrating to me because I actually tried to warn everybody of these things and the media banned me. And so the problem is that when you're not really informed, it is difficult to be informed if you're not a professional, analyst that examines these things. You're going to go to the media. And if you don't like what one side is saying, well, you're going to go to the other side. So what we have is a nation of extremists, you see. That's the problem. And I'll give you another example. The constitutionalists out there, they're being fooled by the neocons and the elites to advocate going back to the Constitution, when in reality what that means is that it's going to be no policing of corporate America. You see, it's a disguise.
Mm-hmm.
The laissez-faire environment. If you think things are bad now, you wait until that happens. So the key thing is we have to address, if you're going to address these things, people need to be informed, because we have to address the complete control over this country, over our politicians, by corporate America. These are complicated things, and people need to understand a lot about macroeconomics and so forth. This is the problem that I see out there.
Excuse me, we don't disagree with what you're saying, but do you have a solution?
Well, of course I have a solution. Of course I have a solution. Now, first of all, let me just say before I summarize it that obviously an in-depth solution, a plan of execution, would take a long time, and I'm not being paid to provide one. So to expect one from me, I think, is not reasonable, because we have people in an office who are supposed to give one. But I'll go ahead and give you a summary of the bullet points. First and foremost, we must ban all lobbyist activities. As long as we have lobbyists, your vote does
there.
Not count.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
You know what's amazing to me is that whenever you hear mention of lobbyists in the media, they'll just kind of brush by it. But they'll say, well, yeah, you know, lobbyists want better. Why doesn't anyone in the media ever say, wait a second, let's ban lobbyists? We know why. Because the media is a partner in crime with the corporations and with Wall Street. That's how they receive their revenues, right? Advertisements.
And also, it would be great if we could get rid of the Federal Reserve. There's no reason why we can't print our own money. That would be
satisfying. There's no doubt about that. But That is a smaller issue relative to the bigger issues. And to be honest with you, while it would be great, I don't know that it's that feasible, because we have to remember that this country fought the Revolutionary War against our motherland in England to stay away from a central bank. That was why the war was fought, right? So this is a big mafioso that controls this country. While I agree, I think we also need to be cautioned against people who advocate getting rid of the Federal Reserve. I think that they're front men, like Ron Paul. I think he's a front person. I think that he serves a purpose of keeping people participating in the political system, keeping people to have hope, when in reality, you have the same man who doesn't address the healthcare system. He wants a laissez-faire economy. He thinks we have a free market healthcare. He comes from the state of Texas, which has nearly 1 in 3 residents who don't have health insurance, and he thinks our healthcare system is fine. We haven't had free market healthcare in decades.
Well, also you have to remember that Ron Paul is part of the two-party system. He's a Republican.
Right, exactly. No, I understand that. I'm just clarifying, ma'am. I'm just clarifying for people who are fooled by him. Because, see, what happens with psychology is, well, you know, some people think, we don't agree with everything, or there's some other things, but he's the best that we have. Well, at this point, we can't settle for the best of the worst. And it's not good enough.
It's not.
We absolutely need a regime change in Washington. Every single politician, in my opinion, is guilty of multiple counts of fraud, of treason. We have sold our country to the interests of Israel. We're fighting these wars for the interests of Israel based upon lies, based upon this baloney of terrorism. We're spending up to $4 to $5 trillion for these wars when you factor in everything. We're spending $3 trillion in the Bush tax cuts, which Obama extended in December. That's a total of up to $8 trillion. Yet no one in Washington wants to say, wait a second here, why should we even think about attacking Medicare and Social Security? People have paid for these benefits. Why shouldn't we attack these tax cuts and these useless wars? You don't hear anybody talk about that. And people are controlled by the media.
No, this is something that we've attacked for years. I mean, we've been at this for years. And I'm grateful that you called about this, because there's sometimes you start to wonder if you're the only one still standing, you know, that kind of thing. But I agree with you 100% on Ron Paul. As far as Paul is concerned, I think he's a rabble rouser. It's great. He's bringing up some really interesting facts. But if you look at who's backing him, it's a real frightening. It's a frightening bunch.
And you have to have a certain level of intelligence and a certain level of diligence, go through a certain level of due diligence to understand these things.
You have to research and you have to understand.
You have to basically approach everyone as, you know, you have to be skeptical, and you have to look at who's in their circle. You know, who are they connected with?
Back at them. Had him coming in neck and neck with Bachman, and Bachman had all the money behind her.
She's a complete joke.
Yeah,
Bachman is so owned by the Israeli lobby. It's pretty scary.
Yeah. And not only the Israeli lobby, but Koch and everybody else. The Tea Party is backed completely by the. Well, I shouldn't say by the Birch, John Birch Society, but their people, their major
They're backed by the corporate interests, here's how they work. The best way to utilize something is you don't try and put out the fuse. You try and direct the momentum that's built up. And use it in your benefit. And this is what the neocons, the Republicans, have done, is that they've taken the Tea Party's momentum, and they have fooled them. And for instance, this whole Freedom Works and these clowns.
But you know what? Right now it's coming back on them. It's really biting them in the neck.
But the problem is, it's coming back to them for what? So people can support the Democratic. It's the same garbage. We need to take action in this country. And every time I say people say, "Oh, you're an extremist," that's extreme. No, I'm not extreme. I just understand the solutions. I understand the problems. I predicted this depression in print 5 years ago. I predicted that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would get bailed out by taxpayers. Wrote that in 2006. I predicted
what
this. The media has banned me.
Do you have a website, or what is your...
Or a blog.
Or a blog that you can talk about?
I advise the funds and so forth, that you can go ahead and look up who I am. My name is Mike Stathis. I wrote America's Financial Apocalypse, How to Profit from the Next Great Depression in 2006, website avaresearch.com. You can see there I exposed the Washington Mutual fraud that was behind the seizure by the OTS and the FDIC. I submitted a complaint to the SEC within a week proving insider trading, which has now come to surface in recent court hearing, and also that they were not insolvent. And what happens to me? They send federal agents to interrogate me. Okay? This is the power of keeping an expert who cannot be bought off out of the media. Nobody knows what happens to me. Nobody knows when I uncover fraud. The Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission also interviewed me last summer by phone, and once they learned what my testimony was going to be as a problem that caused all this, they decided to cut all ties with me. They did not want me to appear before Congress. They did not want my official insights on record. And I basically said, the ultimate reason why this happened is because we have a criminal government and a criminal industry in Wall Street, and they knew that nothing would happen to them. Okay? So, you know, I don't want to hear about people, this person's the face. Nobody in this country has sacrificed more than me, period. By not being a sellout, I have sacrificed tens of millions of dollars. If people knew who I was, if I was getting just 1% of the airtime that I deserved, people would be sending me blank checks and telling me, please, what do I do? Okay, because I'm the guy that predicted all these things. I told people in a book, I wrote in a book in 2007, I told them to short Fannie and Freddie, to short those stocks, to short the banks, to short GE, to short GM. You don't find that in a book. You will never find that in a book, because shorting is normally a short-term strategy, unless a person thinks these things are going down to zero, pretty much. So, you know, I mean, I have the leading track record in the world, and they don't want to listen to me. I'm also an expert in healthcare. I sent the manuscript of my healthcare book to Washington a couple of years ago. Heard nothing. Nothing. And this comes from Obama, a puppet, a typical puppet president, who comes out and tells people, we want to hear from you. Yeah, he wants to hear from you. He wants to hear from you if you're brainless. He doesn't want to hear from you if you're an expert, if you understand what's going on. This country is a criminal, the most criminal country on earth. We have a criminal mafia in this country, and the majority of the power of this mafia is held by the Zionist Jewish mafia. They run the Fed, they run Wall Street, they run the media, and they run Washington. There's others, there's neocons as well, no doubt. But when you connect the dots, you will see why we're spending all this money in Israel for these wars. And by the way, Israel's economy is doing quite nicely. Why?
They don't need to
fight their own wars. We need to worry about this country. And even if we focused on this country, I don't know that we would fix the problems. If you look at all the money that was spent for these wars, we could have spent that money in this depression. But we can't now. You know, the state budget deficits in this country, they total about $450 billion over the past 3 years. The money that we have spent in the Iraq and Afghanistan war during that time could have closed all the state budgets. All the state budget gaps could have been closed by that money. It's unbelievable. Not to mention the loss of lives, the innocent people killed. I'm fed up with this country going to war for money. We need to defend our country against definitive attack, not go off and make all these baloney, 9/11 baloney. That was done by Mossad and the CIA. It was not done by Bin Laden. Bin Laden died 10 years ago. This is baloney, and I'm fed up with it. I'm sick of it.
Bin Laden
people
actually
need to wake up.
He's been dead for 10
he's
years.
He's been dead for quite a while.
He's been dead
thank
for 10
world,
years.
Thank you. At least you guys know. I'm not a conspiracy guy.
We've been talking about this for 10 years.
These are just facts. Well, isn't it funny how these Navy SEALs went in to his camp?
Isn't it amazing how they
he was unarmed. He was unarmed.
Yeah.
Yet they shot him dead, right? The reason why is because they didn't want to have to show him on TV and all this other stuff. And isn't it even more of a coincidence how a month later, the helicopter containing all the SEALs?
Absolutely. We've been mentioning this all along. It's just so coincidental.
So convenient.
Yeah.
What was the main event that happened in between that time? In between the time that Bin Laden was killed, and the time that the helicopter was shot down, the main event was this, the Rupert Murdoch scandal. Think about that for a second. So I'm thinking to myself, the Department of Defense didn't plan on axing these guys, these SEALs. But then this whole scandal broke out, and they're saying, wait a second, what if it gets leaked out? What if the media has been tapping into these guys' communications, right? This is obviously it's a speculative theory, but one thing is for certain: those guys did not die in a helicopter crash that was not planned. There's no.
I gotta ask you again. I just want to mention you're at abaresearch.com. That's your outfit?
Well, that's the site. The company's ABA Investment Analytics. I'm the chief investment strategist.
ABA, right? Research.
Yes.
Okay. Now, ABA is actually retail.
Actually, we're in the process of a site changing. I think it's going to change over the next 24 hours, but that shouldn't be an issue. It'll just be look completely different. But just go through the archives and read when all this stuff with the financial crisis was creating. Listen, I've been banned by the whole internet. Okay. I have been banned by everybody. Why? Because they don't want the truth. People on the internet, if you're not pumping gold to all these unsophisticated investors, then they don't want you to discuss the reality. There's not a single credible expert in the world that you will ever come across who comes out and talks about gold as a good investment. It's always these morons that don't have any professional training. It's always the guys that are connected to the gold dealers. If gold was such a great investment, why are all these companies spending millions of dollars in marketing and endorsements to try and sell it to you? The fact is that gold is now approaching a bubble. Gold will eventually come back down to $300 or $400, where it will remain there for 20 years or longer. It will eventually do that. And let me just say, you're talking to the guy who, in 2006, when I wrote my book, I actually forecast gold to go to at least $1,400 and potentially $2,000. So it's not like I'm some, gold-phobic guy. It's just that once you have the dog and pony show involved, manipulating it to the sheep, right, pitching all these scare tactics and thinking that gold is going to be your savior when the whole earth blows up, that's the wrong approach, you see.
Just excuse me one second. I was just curious. Like the government wanted you to testify and then decided not.
I was interviewed by an investigator with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, and that's all run by the same guys who run the SEC, which are the same guys who run Wall Street, by the way, which explains, by the way, why there's no one in prison. Think about it. Who runs the SEC? Who runs the Commodities and Futures Exchange Commission? Gary Gensler. Who runs the SEC? Mary Shapiro. Mary Shapiro, if you investigate her, you will see that she was on the SEC Commission during in the 80s when the whole Mike Milken SNL crisis scandal broke out. And probably remember what happened to Mike Milken, right? Mike Milken was offered a deal whereby he would go to prison for 10 years and he would be able to leave prison after 10 years with $500 million that he stole. Well, as as we know, Mike Milken spent just over 2 years in Club Fed. And as we know, if you look at the Forbes 500, Mike Milken, of course, when you look at the bio, they talk about him. Steve Forbes is a scumbag. Talk about him as a philanthropist. They don't mention anything with SNL. Of course, Milken was with his buddy Ivan Dosky, right? These things, you know, so Mary Shapiro, she did the right things for the wrong people. This is a theme of our country, whether it's the government or the private sector. The only way to get ahead is by doing the right things for the wrong people. This is a fact.
Look, I'm trying to...
I'm sorry.
You've got to forgive me for a minute, because I'm still trying to get a handle on you, because I wish I'd love to have had you... we have you as a major guest right now. What's the name of your book?
Well, I've written a few books. The ones relevant to this economy are America's Financial Apocalypse. And the first extended version was released in 2006, October 2006. I did put out a condensed version a year later. It's just basically because the original book is massive. And I would recommend that to everybody because it's got 300 figures, tables, and charts. It is massive. It's like three PhD theses. The smaller book, you know, it turns some people off because it's too much. The other one was Cashing In on the Real Estate Bubble, and that was released in March of 2007. And the theme there, basically, my main strategy to cash in was to short the mortgage stocks and the banks.
Yeah.
And then the other book, of course, is more recent, is America's Healthcare Solution. And I actually have a website for that. It's the same domain, americashealthcaresolution.com. You can see a lot of excerpts in there. And I spend the first half of the book explaining the healthcare industry. I have a very strong health sciences background, by the way. But the first half is basically exposing the fraud and the problems within the industry, and it's very complicated. You can't just look to one aspect. All aspects have their problems, from the physicians to the pharmaceutical companies to the health insurers to the lack of fraud prevention by the government. By the private healthcare industry siphoning off the public healthcare funds. And then the second half of the book, I propose a solution. Although I did not position universal healthcare as the solution, and the reason why I didn't do it is because I think it's just too far away. No one is going to accept it. But that's what we really need, is universal healthcare. And in order to understand that, you have to look at the statistics from other countries. When you hear these pundits and these paid-off hacks on TV talk about health care, and they talk about universal health care. Of course, they use the term socialized medicine to give it a stigma. They will only compare what country? They'll only look to Canada, right? Have you noticed that?
I'm curious. I just looked up your book on Amazon here, and I'm looking at American Financial Apocalypse that came out in 2006. And you got 22 reviews on that, almost all 5-star. Is that the same book we're talking about?
Sir, I'll just tell you, I don't even forget reviews. People don't like me. They'll put bad reviews. I'll tell you the indicator. If you go on my website and you look at the top box and it says my track record and you click that box, it will show you my forecast and predictions in the book, in that book. And it'll tell you what it said and it'll tell you the page number.
What's the website?
So you can see, actually, I was warning people about the real estate bubble chapter is only one of 18 chapters. You see, that's the tipping point. The real estate bubble is the tipping point. And they said once the real estate bubble popped, we were going to see an avalanche of problems beginning with Medicare and Medicaid and the healthcare system. I discussed all these things. So, the media is just now catching on to this stuff. The media, they all know who I am. They're banning me. I've been on Jerry Doyle. I've been on Tom Hartman. These guys are fakes. They're a bunch of fakes. All of them. All these guys in the media, if they're in the media, forget it. They're fakes. The media, we know who runs the media, and we also know that the government has their hands in the media too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You all know that.
We would like to go to your website. Can you tell us what your website is?
I'm sorry?
What's your website?
The website's avaresearch.com.
Oh, no.
ABA Research.
ABA.
ABA
Research.
Research.
I'll tell you right now, anybody that read the book should be 5 stars, because that book predicted everything in detail. There's probably never been a more comprehensive investor-related book ever written. Why do I know? Because I did it. Okay, and I talked about, you know, they talk about the 2 or 3 guys that made money off of the subprimes. They're clueless. They're clowns. Why? Because it's one thing to bet against subprimes, and you can always change your bet. But when you have a guy that's saying Fannie and Freddie are going to collapse, short those stocks, and they don't have exclusively subprimes, that really tells you the understanding that I had, right? And I put it in the book. I could have looked like a fool if it didn't work, right? So yeah, this is the reality. And you can imagine the frustration, because I sacrificed my life. I left Wall Street towards the end of the dot-com charade in 2003, because I was disgusted with that industry. I sat there and saw massive fraud. I sat there and saw retirees losing trillions of dollars of their money, and nobody went to jail. Nobody. I was disgusted. I was disgusted. I saw the same thing brewing on a magnitude of 50 to 100 times larger, and so I spent 3 years to write this book. Not a single publisher would publish the book.
Which book was this one?
They haven't touched me. None of my books. I published all of my books. I learned how to publish.
What?
I did it myself. You see, the reality is that what I've learned is that if you speak the truth and say, well, you know, maybe you just don't have credibility. Let me tell you something. I've got more credibility just for my credentials than 95% of people who publish books on that subject. And in terms of the track record, I've got the best credentials out there, period. Period. Nobody can touch me. You see, that's just a fact. It's just a reality. And so the fact is, I mean, my credentials, you know, I went to an Ivy League university. I have a master's in chemistry. I was a National Science Foundation research fellow. I worked at 2 powerhouse Wall Street firms. So I think my credentials are quite sufficient. If you look at the morons in the media, that they have their experts. You research who they are. They're all clowns, and they all have terrible track records, all of them. But you'll notice one thing. The vast majority of the financial and economic experts in the media, if you'll notice, they're almost always Jewish. Why is that? I'll tell you why. Because we have a media that's run by Jewish power elites, and they want to enrich their own. They don't care about interviewing people with expertise. They will enrich people who will sell out, because you got people, they know that if they sell out in the media, they can make millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. This is why no one in the media says, wait a second, why is no one in prison? No one will say that.
I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to your
And of course, if you talk about the power issue in this country by Israel and the Zionist Jews and the elites, of course, you call the racist. Listen, that baloney doesn't fly with intelligent people.
Sure. Who's
been raped.
It's absolutely
true. And she complains about it, and someone calls, you know, someone starts to blame her for the rape. I mean, give me a break. I'm fed up with this stuff that's going on. And by the way, I didn't even know this was going on, sir. I didn't understand this control when I wrote the Apocalypse book. I was unaware of it. I had my eyes closed. It was only when the media started banning me that I started to research what was going on. And then I connected the dots. Then I started looking up and saw that, for instance, if you look at our government agencies, almost every single major government agency, you take a guess who heads it? Jewish individuals.
Well,
the FDA.
I would say probably there's Zionists.
No, by the way, I'm not like, I don't like hate Jews. I have friends that are Jewish. But I can tell you, they're not involved in all this garbage. They stay away from these issues. They're nice people. They're normal people. The problem is that in America, from what I have seen, most Jewish individuals are Zionist Jews, and they don't realize it. They don't consciously realize that they're Zionists. If you're in this country, you need to be an American.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
You need to be an American.
Well,
that's my opinion.
People that the Zionists abused were the Jews themselves. They hijacked their religion and history.
Well, when
hij-
you you
behind
guys know
us.
Where I'm coming from then. You guys know. You're up to speed on this stuff, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, we can go. So you all know. You say you're informed about these things.
Listen,
the problem, the only problem, though, is that the Jewish network is so powerful that you have an intersection between non-Zionist and Zionists. Because of the Jewish network, that is the common link. And even for Jews who are not Zionists, they won't speak out typically because they will face severe consequences because of the Jewish network. They'll face severe consequences in their family. They'll face severe consequences in the business world. It'll be just very, very, very difficult.
Well, we have a friend who was recently threatened because he spoke out.
Yeah, he's a Jewish activist, pro-Palestinian activist who was just threatened by the Jewish Defense League here in Connecticut.
We don't know whether it was the Jewish Defense League.
Yeah,
he was threatened by someone.
He was bodily threatened, you know, if you didn't shut up, because he does a television show and he's a very outspoken guy, and involved with political movements and so on, but. He was actually threatened, and he filed a police report against them, and they're investigating the group now.
We'll see what happens.
But this is the kind of intimidation that we're up against.
Well, the only upside for me being banned by the media, and I think it's a travesty to Americans. It's a travesty that my voice wasn't heard. The only upside is that because I'm not known. I don't pose a threat to the criminal organization that runs this country, so therefore, you know, I'm probably pretty safe because no one, you know, I mean, just look around. I mean, you have all of this massive fraud over and over again, and Americans have not stormed Washington. That simply means they're never going to. If they haven't done it by now, this is why this country is finished. I was actually trying to close my book as being an optimist. I basically said Washington will not make the changes they need to until they're forced to. And we see now. They were forced to do it, and what did they do? They didn't make the changes. The changes are, let me finish, by the way. You asked me the solutions. I mentioned one, the lobbyists, and then you mentioned the Fed, which I agree with, but the core ones are – because the Federal Reserve doesn't directly, immediately affect your ability to put food on your table.
Mm-hmm.
What does are these ridiculous trade policies, which have exported millions of jobs. And that was the big theme of my book, the thing that I focused on extensively, two issues, free trade and healthcare. I feel that those are the two big things that are destroying this country. You know, we have a million Americans that file for medical bankruptcy every single year, 1 million.
My God.
And by the way, and this is not my research, this is Harvard Medical School research. According to the researchers at Harvard, up to 78% of those who file for medical bankruptcy, 1 million, up to 78% of them had full health insurance. This is shocking. And it's probably, you know, you can probably figure out the why. Well, try paying a 20% copay on a cancer diagnosis, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue. And all these Americans out there that think that they're doing something to help this country, these Tea Party morons and all these other people, you know, the Tea Party, they want to get rid of Medicare. These people are idiots. All these people that think they're doing something, saying, oh, no, you know, get rid of Obamacare. They want to get rid of Obamacare for the wrong reason. They don't want to get rid of it because it never addressed the real issues. They want to get rid of it to side with the Republican Party, which has no solutions either. What's the solution? The Ryan Plan? Do you know the Ryan Plan will cause seniors to spend $35 trillion out of pocket over the next, I believe, 75 years? $35 trillion out of pocket. That's the Ryan Plan. Do you know that? People don't know these things. I mean, these people that they're using as puppets to fight for their causes, these are the same people who are going to be in the gutter. They're committing suicide, and they don't even realize it because they don't understand the issues. They're going to the the wrong sources, the media. You don't. Mm-hmm. We have the most controlled media in the developed world.
Absolutely.
And they use sophisticated tactics to censor people. I'll give you a perfect example. Where's it? David Gregory, Face the Nation, is that right? I mean, these guys on that show, half of them are from the CIA. This David Brooks guy, the journalist, he's from the CIA. I mean, why are you having journalists on these political shows to talk about economics? You see, so they pretend like they have an open debate, and they don't really have an open debate, because there are individuals who have greater expertise than me in healthcare. You know, this is not my full-time dedication. I think I have sufficient expertise, but there are individuals who have much higher expertise than me who are not bought off, and those would be a lot of researchers at a lot of the academic institutions. Are they ever allowed to speak? Of course not. Look at Martha Angel, Dr. Martha Angel. She was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine for 20 years, and she finally resigned after she got fed up with the drug industry basically buying the research in that journal. And she exposed the whole industry through a book that she wrote. You don't hear about these people.
No.
These are the people who know what's going on. These are the loyal people. The people that you hear about, those are the front people. They are the bought-off people. If they have exposure, they are involved in the crime, period, because the media and the corporations determine who gets the exposure, and they're not going to let somebody get exposure who's going to actually fight for the people. This is just what I have learned.
We run into this constantly, Mike. There's no question about that.
I'm glad that you guys are up to speed on these things, because I can tell you this whole Blog Talk Radio served a bunch of chumps. Okay? It's filled with a bunch of chumps. They don't know what's going on. They're completely clueless. And so it's good to see that you guys are up to speed on these issues.
You got to remember, we've been on for 5 years, but we've been on FM and we've been on television for 10 or 11 actually now, but it's like this is what we do, trying to expose this crazy stuff and trying to bring guests. I'm so glad that we got to talk to you, and I'd love to have you on again as an official guest.
Sure. I did actually an interview recently for someone with an Arizona Tea Party, and I was a little upset that he really didn't read my books. He didn't really look into, you know, it's important to understand my track record, to understand my insights, so that, you know, the impact of what I say will have a larger impact. So I spend some time on my website, if you will.
I will.
Spend some time on there.
I'm there right now, but I can really understand your frustration. All right.
I selflessly sacrificed. I can tell you, I've gotten more backlash from people who are unsophisticated in these things, people who have attached themselves emotionally to the wrong issues, and they're being fooled.
Absolutely.
You know, every time I call up these clowns, Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levine, I tell them who I am and what I want to talk about, and the producer, the call screener, hangs up on me.
Oh, I'm sure.
These guys are clowns. They're not qualified to talk about anything other than Britney Spears, period.
Yeah, I got to tell you.
They go on their show and talk about how America's, I mean, once again, we have extremists. America has some issues, but it's not like all these gold-pumping people say. The dollar's going to zero. We're not going to have hyperinflation. That's baloney. It's impossible. Do you know what's impossible for America to have hyperinflation? Now, once again, you're talking to a guy, the only guy that I know of who actually predicted depression, yet I'm saying we're not going to have hyperinflation. And by the way, I predicted inflationary depression. But it's impossible to have hyperinflation because the dollar is linked to oil.
Right.
You have to have a dollar around the world to buy oil and commodities. That was an agreement struck by Nixon with the Saudis in 71, right?
Yes.
That's why we can't have to think about it. How are we going to have hyperinflation when you have to have the dollar to buy oil? So in other words, the dollar goes to zero, so oil is free?
This is
the key, and this is what's harming us, because the Saudis are getting pretty upset with our unilateral support for Israel. Israel offers us nothing. We benefit. They don't have any resources. They have very limited and small manpower. They won't even let us use their military bases. They offer us nothing, period. The reason why we continue to support them is because of the very strong Zionist Jewish network in this country that has all the money and all the power. But I can tell you, if the Saudis decided to go to OPEC and some of that dollar oil link, you would see this country, the economy, completely implode, and you would see hyperinflation. But the Saudis know this. They know that we would send missiles there overnight if there was any threat of that. And by the way, this is the reason why we want to attack Iran, because Iran opened their own oil exchange called the Iranian Oil Burst recently, and they're selling their oil for the euro because they know that's how to harm the U.S. economy. But anyway, check my site out. There's an email contact there. It'll sent to me through someone else. I look forward to speaking to you guys. But since the time, don't waste time on some of the investment stuff on the front page. You need to go like to the critical reads to the left, the red bar to the left, and also some of the other archives, and you'll see what was going on. I was writing about and also look at the track record as well, and you'll see
we've got about 4 minutes, but before we get our next guest. But I'm so glad you called it tonight. But I wanted to say I'm filling out your email thing here, and I'm trying to set up an interview time with you. But I wanted to ask you if you minded. I'll tell people that it's avaresearch.com. And Mike Sathis, I believe, is how you pronounce your last name?
That's correct. Well, I've been banned throughout the Internet, okay? If you're not pumping gold, I just don't want to have you, because, I see nothing but sheep out there. And honestly, it's all profiteers. Everybody wants to make money for themselves. The journalists are not writing books, dramatizing.
We'd love to spend
to the max. I'm disgusted. And I'll tell you, my friend, at some point... It's the American people who are to blame, because they keep on letting this stuff happen over and over and over again. I'm starting to get pretty disgusted at the American people.
Hey, look, Mike, we got another guest coming up in about 2 minutes, but I wanted to thank you so much for calling us.
I appreciate that. You voice my ideas.
Well, it's great. It's really great to be able to talk to somebody like yourself, who thinks really on the same lines we do, and have been trying to get the word out. And looking at your site, I advise people to go to it. It's an excellent looking site.
AVAresearch.com. And Mike, we look forward to having you on
in the near future. We'll have Tuesday night, if possible. Yeah, within the next week.
Good dinner, guys.
All right. Thank you so much.
Continue listening, but we got to go on to our next guest. But I want to thank you for calling, Mike. And it's Mike Sathis, and he's with the
AVAresearch.com.
He happened to be calling in tonight. It just so happened where our other guest canceled out, but Mike happened to call in. It's just telepathy, isn't it?
Wonderful that that he called. And
yeah,
great. We had another guest set up who couldn't, for whatever reason,
he was unable. He called last minute and was unable to do it, so we were kind of stuck with that one. But Mike was excellent. I want to thank Mike for calling in. And we will definitely have him on again.
Yeah.
AV, as in Victor, research.com, Mike Sathis.
S-T-A-T-H-I-S.
And check out American Financial
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse, right.
Cashing in on the real estate bubble.
Look up his book on Amazon.com. I did that while we were talking to him. And
America's Healthcare Solutions.
Yeah.
Those were the three that I wrote down.
I think you'll be amazed.
I bet he's probably written others. He sounds like he's quite
There's five or six different books there that he's quite
But those are the three
that
I wrote down.
So
it was very interesting listening to him talk.
No, it was fantastic. And we got Woody on the line here, and he's going to join us right after we set up this segment.
introduction.
Oh, you're good evening. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, sports fans, and a special good evening to my Twitter peeps, but more on them later. For now, watch your heads on the ropes as you step into the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics, NFL news, Tiger at the tournament, and, of course, baseball news. But let's get down to it with a little bit of football. San Francisco police interviewed witnesses and looked for suspects on Sunday after two men were shot and wounded following Saturday's 49ers and Raiders preseason game at Candlestick Park. Kind of gives a new meaning to fan appreciation. A 24-year-old man reportedly was wearing a Fuck the Niners t-shirt, remained hospitalized in serious condition after being shot several times in the stomach. He managed to stumble to stadium security for help despite the severity of his injuries. A second victim, a 20-year-old man, was treated for less serious wounds in a separate shooting also after the game. Wow. You got to like those Raiders fans. They are tough to kill, kind of like cockroaches. According to police, no arrests have been made, but the police are looking for a person of interest connected to at least one of the shootings. Of course, they wouldn't specify which shooting, just one of the shootings. A motive for either attack, whether either was influenced by emotions surrounding a game involving the fiercely rival teams, also wasn't known, but pretty much is assumed. Apart from the shootings, a third victim, a 26-year-old man, was also hospitalized from a serious condition yesterday after he was knocked out in a stadium bathroom during the game. That attack appeared unrelated to the two shootings. The crimes have prompted San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee and Oakland Mayor Gene Juan to issue a joint statement saying that violence at stadiums in both cities will not be tolerated. The victims' names have been not released as the violence spree overshadowed the Niners' 17-3 victory over the Raiders. Now, during the game, the Raiders' tight end, Kevin Boss, sprained his left knee after being hit by a helmet, and he'll be evaluated on a week-to-week basis. Now, in response to the violence, the San Francisco 49ers are banning tailgating in the parking lot of Candlestick Park after the game start, and any season ticket holders caught misbehaving on video will have their tickets revoked. Also, 49ers CEO Jed York says he will recommend to the NFL that the annual preseason game between the arch-rival Niners and the Oakland Raiders will be put off next year. San Francisco Police, Mayor Ed Lee, and 49ers officials say the police will set up DUI checkpoints near the stadium after all 49ers games and strictly forbid alcohol consumption then. I don't know. This is a pretty sad story if you ask me. I'm a huge sports fan, you know, football, baseball, and a few other major sports. I mean, I root hard for the Yankees. I hate Red Sox fans with a passion, but would I want to shoot one of them? Probably not really. I mean, as it is, the players on the field barely want to beat the other guy. Most of the time, one of their homeboys is on the other team, and it's like, yeah, whatever, we win, we don't, we don't. I mean, you know, to follow these teams and make it like life or death is just absolutely ludicrous. I don't know what planet these people are on, but let me tell you something. These players on the field could give two shits less whether you root for their team or the other team. All of them are getting paid monster money and barely want to give you an autograph when you see them on the street. Are you kidding me? You're going to die for these guys? Seriously. Crazy. Just crazy. More Raiders news. Terrell Pryor finally found an NFL home earlier than many expected. The Oakland Raiders selected the former Ohio State quarterback with the 18th pick in the third round of the NFL supplemental draft on Monday, ending months-long speculation over his NFL future. After delaying the NFL draft to consider Pryor's eligibility, Commissioner Roger Goodell admitted the 22-year-old Thursday with the caveat of a 5-game suspension. The supplemental draft is typically reserved for players deemed academically ineligible after April's draft. Pryor chose to skip his senior season after a tattoo for memorabilia scandal that led to the resignation of coach Jim Tressel. He would have been suspended for 5 games by the NCAA anyway. That's why Goodell was like, okay, you can come in, but you got to do 5 games. Pryor worked out for like 17 teams on Saturday, said he wouldn't appeal his 5-game suspension despite his lawyers saying otherwise. In picking Pryor, the Raiders have forfeited their third-round pick in 2012. They already dealt their fourth-round draft pick in trade for quarterback Jason Campbell. According to the Raiders, they're going to, you know, give him a shot at quarterback. Frankly, I think he's going to end up being a wide receiver, but we'll just have to wait and see. little bit more NFL news from gang from Big Blue to Gang Green. If anybody watched the game Plexico Burress played this past weekend, especially if you're a Giant fan, you're kind of like shaking your head going, damn, I think we kind of should have brought him back. Burress, as many of you may or may not know, is an extremely tall wide receiver. The guy puts up a great target. He's a fantastic target, especially in red zone offense. You know, he kind of like towers over cornerbacks and stuff. Although he's not exceptionally bright, he did shoot himself in the leg with a handgun at a club, and he just did a couple of years for it. But the guy is an athlete. He is a game kind of turning kind of guy. Just to run by a few of his, you know, a few things that went down in the game. In his first bit of action, he lined up against a cornerback, and the guy gave him a half-hearted jam. Sanchez drilled him with like a 20-yard strike, and you know it was like the Jets' first play from scrimmage. Another time, Sanchez missed him, almost threw it like right into the arms of the cornerback, kind of dropped the ball. Another time, he missed him on a post, and then Burress lined up against a Hall, and he spun around and he did his little back maneuver, and he caught a ball for a 20-yard reception, pretty nice maneuver. And then in the final 51 seconds of the first half, Burress was one-on-one against another cornerback, Fred Burnett. And he threw a rainbow. Burress dove for it in the end zone, and after plays reviewed, it's a 26-yard touchdown reception. So, I mean, that's exactly the kind of stuff the Jets are looking for. I think he's going to be a great target for Mark Sanchez. Burress is the kind of guy that makes a quarterback look better than he actually is because of his height, because of his ability. You know, he's a good safety valve. You know, you're in trouble, you're back there scrambling around, oh, hey, there's Burress, whammo, 40-yarder, or something like that, anything. It's just, I bet the Giants feel like they kind of missed it. Even though the guy was in trouble, I mean, that's why the Steelers got rid of him in the first place, but I bet the Giants are kind of going, I know one of the Giants owners, not Mara, the other guy, a name evades me at the time, but the other guy that owns 50% of the team wanted Burress back. Now, why he didn't get his way, I mean, unbeknownst to me, I would assume the Mara people didn't want him back, and I would assume Tom Coughlin didn't want him back, and maybe it was, three against one. But, Plaxico definitely will be worth watching, and he made some boasts that he wants the Jets to score, I think, 28 points per game this year, which is up from, like, 7 from last year. And with him in the offense, anything is possible. Okay, let's move a little bit to golf. Tiger Woods. He's thinking about adding another PGA Tour event to his schedule after he didn't qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs that start this week in New Jersey for the top 125 players, meaning he's ineligible for tour events until October. Ouch, that's going to leave a mark. He also wants to be part of the President's Cup team in Australia the week before Thanksgiving. Now, that would depend on Fred Couples using a captain's pick, which coincidentally is scheduled to play in the Australia the week before the President's Cup. Yeah, right. I wouldn't be doing him any favors if I was Fred Couples. Woods is one of the most arrogant people there is. He's on a downward spiral. Let him keep going. I mean, that's just me, but what are you going to do? Moving on, a little bit of baseball news. All right. The free agent pitching market grew thinner when Jared Weaver of the Anaheim Angels surprisingly agreed to a club-friendly 5-year, $85 million contract extension. Weaver, who's 14-6 with an American League-leading 2.1 ERA and due to become a free agent after 2012, chose security over money. It probably cost himself like $60 million. C.C. Sabathia agreed to a 7-year, $161 million deal with the New York Yankees in 2008. Cliff Lee is 5 years, $125 million deal with the Phillies in December. According to agent Scott Boras, he knows his value and had close to 30 illustrations given to him to understand his value. He knows not becoming a free agent would cost him millions and millions of dollars. It also cost Boras big money, too. But the necessity to stay home was compelling. Recent and future free agent classes were thin when such pitchers as Justin Verlander, Felix Hernandez, Zach Greinke, Matt Cain, John Lester, James Shields, and Johnny Cueto signed long-term deals. Teams are being a lot smarter now, said Philly star Cole Hamels, eligible free agency after 2012. When they have somebody they want to keep, they make sure they get it done. And that's true, very true. And when Weaver got, when the Yankees missed the boat on Lee, I was like, well, Weaver's available next year. I wouldn't mind having Weaver, even though we had his pot-smoking brother on the team who kind of, like, tanked like Burnett is about to, who I'm going to talk about next. But I would take Jared Weaver, but not no more. He is gone. Now, speaking of tanking and A.J. Burnett. Now, A.J. Burnett is supposed to be the number two guy in the Yankees rotation. However, he's pitching like the number six guy. Just over his last five starts, he's been, you know, kind of abysmal. At Minnesota, an inning and two-thirds, five hits, seven runs, result, loss, 4-9. At Kansas City, five and two-thirds, 10 hits, three earned runs, win, hoo-hoo, 7-4. Anaheim Angels, six innings, seven hits, four runs, loss, 4-6. At Chicago White Sox, four and a third, 13 hits, seven runs. Now, the Yankees won, but he didn't get the win. 18-7. Baltimore, eight innings pitch, five hits, four earned, loss 2-4. He's pitching like, you know, a severe back end of the rotation guy. On Saturday, he had a little to-do on the mound, supposedly with Girardi. According to Girardi, Girardi thinks that he was actually, you know, harumphing about the umpire. But if you go back and you look at the video, it kind of looks like he was cursing Girardi out for taking him out of the game. I mean, I don't know. Girardi says otherwise. Burnett says otherwise. You almost want to take him at their word. But if you look at the video, man, the video says otherwise. I mean, Burnett is obviously cursing. And it really looks like he's cursing at Girardi. I don't care what he says or what Girardi says. Girardi's definitely been a player's manager. And he stands behind his guys. And I certainly respect that. But sometimes you got to put the hammer down. And, you know, you got to get some respect out of some of these guys. You know, Burnett's making big money, and he's pitching like garbage. I don't know. I just expect more out of somebody that makes so much money and is pitching poorly. I would be kissing my manager's ass like you would not believe. If I was pitching like this, dude, I would really be kissing ass. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And I don't know. I have heard the opposite about Burnett, which is much unlike his persona that the media portrays. I've heard from other media sources that Burnett is actually really a wonderful guy. However, if you see him in the after-game interviews, he just really just seems like a douchebag. I don't know. He maybe needs to go to a media school or something and just try and change that image, a PR guy or something. I don't know. He really needs to do something to try and get the fans behind him. He's got to appear to be a better person. You know, granted, maybe he is. Like this guy says, he's a great guy, great teammate, yada, yada. But, dude, you sure don't look like it. Okay. That's it for the sports talk. I want to switch gears for a moment. I've been on Twitter since April. And for all of you that don't know how Twitter works, I assume at least you've heard of it. Basically, it's a form of social media which operates in real time. For instance, if I just climbed Mount Everest, what would I do? I would take a picture, upload it, and then I would tweet my accomplishment to all my followers. Now, I've done nothing as grand as climbing Mount Everest. Mostly it's far more mundane stuff. However, I've had some great short conversations with some like-minded people on subjects that we find mutually interesting. One subject that has seemed to dominate my feed is the death of grunge rock god Kurt Cobain. Now, you might say, hey, Woody, why do you care? That was like 17 years ago. Well, for one, I was a Nirvana fan when Nirvana was Nirvana, when MTV actually played music instead of the Jersey Shore. For two, that murdering, fame-chasing whore, Courtney Love, still walks amongst us. Bold statement, right? Bold statement with a lot of truth behind it. Here's a woman whose own daughter has a long-standing restraining order against her. Wouldn't you think that if your dad killed himself, allegedly, you would be oh so close to your mother? Probably. But probably not if curiosity got the best of you. And curiosity probably got the best of Frances Bean, and she followed the evidence, which is exactly what I urge you to do at CobainCase.com. I repeat, CobainCase.com. On Twitter, you can get updates from Tom Grant, the PI who actually followed the evidence, unlike the Keystone Cops in Seattle. And on Twitter, it's just Cobain Case. And you get all kinds of updates on the case from Tom Grant, great PI. Courtney Love has moved to try and get his PI's license revoked, and she's failed. It's just, you know, kind of comical. I find it tragic and insulting to my generation that the death of Kurt Cobain was mishandled and the murders of Tupac Shakur and Notorious Big have remained unsolved. To me, the attitude of the police has been somewhat cavalier. Who cares? A white junkie and two blacks from the ghetto who didn't know their place. Had these deaths involved maybe Kim Kardashian, Brad Pitt, or Jennifer Aniston, they probably would be solved rather quickly. Bottom line, if any of this interests you at all, hop on Twitter with some of my friends and discuss it with the likes of Easily A Muser, that's E-A-S-I-L-Y, Big A Muser, M-U-S-E-R, he's in Israel. My girl Ruby Cocoon, R-U-B-Y-C-O-C-O-O-N, Justice for Kurt. My girl up in Canada, Closure for Cobain, that's Closure for Cobain. She's also a fabulous artist. And I would be remiss if I failed to mention Itza C.L. Pinata. Itza C.L. Pinata, and the C.L. obviously stands for Courtney Love. This person is extremely knowledgeable on the Cobain death and on Courtney Love. Constant thorn in her side. Believe me, if you check this stuff out, you can't help but want to do something. That's it for this week. Shout out to all my Widowheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS. Everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club, especially those of you who survived today's earthquake with me. That's it for this week. Summer's coming to a close, man. Get in some sun and some fun. See y'all next week.
do we have one other short song for our...
Oh, you want another short song? Yeah.
Our listeners' enjoyment? What do you have?
I got one here. I don't know if that's that.
That one.
I don't know. Yeah, a second. We'll come right back if we don't like it.
Music.
Well, actually, this is called All You Can Eat. We always play this one.
Yeah, the same one.
Do you want to play this one?
Yeah, I like that one.
We play All Is Not Lost.
Oh, okay. You could try something.
I always like that one. It's kind of like a cool song.
Go ahead.
Nice song. Okay. All Is Not Lost. I like this song. Hope you enjoy it.
Catch up on how this could possibly be happening again. by reading or rereading my July 25th post below. Okay, let's look at that.
Well, it says stay tuned as we will be on the air.
Now let's look for the quiz post below. Oops. Saturday sludge, a new batch of oil arrives. Let's play that. See what
it's 9 minutes, but I don't know.
See if there's a little bit on there that would be interesting.
New batch of oil, Long Beach, Missouri.
By Mississippi?
Oh.
By Denise Rednar?
Yeah.
Right. I'm seeing a lot of seagulls today, which is I guess a good sign. These are a little different than the normal seagulls I see. They're not the black and white ones. These are either that or they're youngsters. They're a little different.
Yeah, they're on that site there, but she hasn't really posted at all.
No.
I'm not sure what's going on. Well, that's okay.
I couldn't find that.
Anyway,
go to
a Project Mindwave and check that out. Because if that's really happening, that's a major story. And,
when, of course, the mainstream media, again, has ignored
to tell you. Okay. This is really neat, interesting. If you're a Goldman Sachs hater like we are, then you will...
This will really make you hate them.
Spin your head. I wrote this. Where do Goldman Sachs weasels go after they destroy the economy? They change their names and become congressional staffers. Here we go. Goldman Sachs, this is from Truth Out, but yeah, you know, Goldman Sachs BP changed his name. Now advances a golden lobbying interest as a top staffer to DARE, DARRE.
I think it's Daryl Issa.
Oh, Daryl Issa. Okay, I'm sorry. Daryl Issa.
Maybe.
So hang on one second. I think the guy's name was Issa. And he changed it to something other jerky.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So this is from Truth Out, which is...
Let's see what the rest of this says. Come on, get bigger there.
Okay, Goldman Sachs, BP changed name to top congressional staffer.
Has Representative Daryl Issa turned the House Oversight Committee into a bank lobbying firm with the power to subpoena and pressure government regulators? Think Progress has found that a Goldman Sachs vice president changed his name, then quietly went to work for ISA to coordinate his effort to thwart regulations that affect Goldman Sachs' bottom line.
In July, ISA sent a letter to top government regulators demanding that they back off and provide more justification for new margin requirements for financial firms dealing in derivatives. A standard practice on Capitol Hill is to end a letter to a government agency with contact information for the congressional staffer responsible for working on the issue for the committee. In most cases, the contact staffer is the one who actually writes such letters. With this in mind, it is important to note that ISA's letter ended with contact information for Peter Haler, a staffer hired this year to work for ISA on the oversight committee.
ISA's demand to regulate is exactly what banks have been wishing for. Indeed, Goldman Sachs has spent millions this year trying to slow down the implementation of the new rules. In the letter, ISA explicitly mentions that the new derivative regulations might hurt brokers, such as Goldman Sachs. Haller, as he is now known, went by the name Peter Simonoyi. Until 3 years ago, Simonoyi adopted his mother's maiden name, Haller, in 2008, just as he was leaving Goldman Sachs as a vice president of the bank's commodity compliance group. In a few short years, Haller went from being in charge of dealing with regulators for Goldman Sachs to working for Congress in a position where he made official demands from regulators overseeing his old firm.
Truth Out is, it is not the first time Haller has worked the revolving door to help out Goldman Sachs. According to a report by the Nonpartisan Project on Government Oversight, Haller, then known as Peter Simonoyi, left the Securities and Exchange Commission in 2005 to work for Goldman Sachs, then quickly began lobbying his colleagues at the SEC on behalf of his new firm. At one point, Haller was compelled to issue a letter to the SEC claiming he did not violate ethics rules. A brief timeline of Hala's work history underscores the ethical issues raised with ICE's latest letter to bank regulators.
After completing his law degree in 2000, Hala was employed by the Federal Energy Regulation Commission as an economist, and later with the Securities and Exchange Commission in the Office of Environment. In April of 2005, Hala resigned from the SEC to take a job with Goldman Sachs. He soon began lobbying the SEC on behalf of Goldman Sachs. On September 2, 2009, Hala left Goldman Sachs to take a job with the law lobbying firm Brookfield, Burchett, Ritz & Stone. In January of 2011, Hala was hired to work for ICE on the Oversight Committee. Under the supervision of Hala, ICE sent a letter dated July 22, 2011, to bank regulators, including the heads of the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, FCA, CFTC, FHFA, and the Office of Comptroller, demanding documents to justify new Dodd-Frank mandated rules on margin requirements for banks dealing in the multi-trillion dollar OTC derivative market like Goldman Sachs.
When he took over the chairmanship of the Oversight Committee this year, ICE dramatically shifted the committee's focus away from its traditional role of investigating major corporate scandals. Instead, ICE has used the committee to merge the responsibilities of Congress with the interest of K Street and ICE's own fortune. And remember, you got to remember, like this year, the Senate Investigative Committee just indicted Goldman Sachs. So
yeah,
this guy's a timely little appointee.
Yeah, a little bold.
When he took over the chair in June of this year, Think Progress broke the story about ICE's own complicated relationship with Goldman Sachs. We revealed that ICE had purchased a large amount of Goldman Sachs high-yield bonds at the same time as he used the Oversight Committee to attack the investigation into allegations that Goldman Sachs had systematically defrauded investors leading up to the financial crisis. Now, ICE should be indicted and kicked the hell out of Congress for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, the conflict of interest, along with our exclusive story about ICE's earmark benefiting his own real estate empire, received coverage in a recent piece by the New York Times. We also broke a story last month revealing other revolving door conflicts with ICE's staff. Peter Warren, ICE's new policy director, maintained some type of financial contract with a student loan lobbying group he led last year and receives a bonus from the lobbying group before leaving to work for ICE. And since joining ICE's staff, Warren and his colleagues have fought to weaken the recently created Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the new agency charged with overseeing student loans.
The new revelations about Peter Hala, however, raised even more significant and ethical concerns than Peter Warren and other ex-lobbyists working for ICE. Why did ICE hire a high-level Goldman Sachs executive to work on stopping regulations on banks like Goldman Sachs? Hala's direct involvement in the July letter brings ICE's ability to lead the oversight committee charged with conducting investigations on behalf of the public interest into serious doubt.
Go to that article, you can get that truth out, or you can have it posted up on my Facebook account, under Leo Steele. Now let's go back to that. Now, this one's going to kick you right in the ass, this one is Obama's FDA advisor from hell, Monsanto. Birth of a New Earth. Obama appoints Monsanto vice president as senior advisor to the commissioner, FDA. This is so sick. It makes you sick. Just thinking about it. There we go. Obama appoints Monsanto's vice president as senior advisor to the commissioner at the FDA. This is from Birth of a New Earth blog. Folks, it just keeps getting more insane. Michael Taylor was just appointed senior advisor to the commissioner of the FDA. This is the same man that was in charge of FDA policy when GMOs were allowed into the U.S. food supply without undergoing a single test to determine their safety. He had been Monsanto's attorney before becoming policy chief at the FDA, and then he became Monsanto's vice president and chief lobbyist. This month, he became the senior advisor to the commissioner of the FDA. He is now America's top food safety czar.
Oh, my
this
God.
This is no joke. Here is the full story. You're appointing who, Mr. Obama? It's not so. And the person who may be responsible for more food-related illness and death than anyone in history has just been made the food safety czar. This is no joke. Here's the backstory.
When FDA scientists were asked to weigh in on what was to become the most radical and potentially dangerous change in our food supply, the introduction of GMO foods, secret documents now reveal that the experts were very concerned. Memo after memo describes toxins, new diseases, nutritional deficiencies, and hard-to-detect allergens. They were adamant that the technology carried serious health hazards and required careful long-term research, including human studies, before any genetically modified organisms could be safely released into the food supply. But the biotech industry had rigged the game so that neither science nor scientists would stand in their way. They had placed their own man in charge of the FDA policy, and he wasn't going to be swayed by fecal arguments related to food safety. No, he was going to do what corporations had done for decades to get past these types of pesky concerns. He was going to lie.
Dangerous food safety lies. When the FDA was constructing their GMO policy in 1991 to 1992, their scientists were clear that gene-sliced foods were significantly different and could lead to different risks than conventional foods. But official policy declares the opposite, claiming that the FDA knew nothing of the significant differences and declared GMOs substantially equivalent. This fiction became the rationale for allowing GM foods on the market without any required safety studies whatsoever. The determination of whether GM foods were safe to eat was placed entirely in the hands of the companies that made them, and companies like Monsanto, which told us that the PCBs, DDT, and Agent Orange were safe. GMOs were rushed onto our plates in 1996. Over the next 9 years, multiple chronic illnesses in the U.S. nearly doubled, from 7% to 13%, allegedly allergy-related. Emergency room visits doubled between 1997 and 2002, while food allergies, especially among children, skyrocketed. We also witnessed a dramatic rise in asthma, autism, obesity, diabetes, digestive disorders, and certain cancers.
In January of this year, Dr. P.M. Bhargava, one of the world's top biologists, told me that after reviewing 600 scientific journals, he concluded that GM foods in the U.S. are largely responsible for the increase in many serious diseases. In May, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine concluded that animal studies have demonstrated a casual relationship between GM food, causal relationship between GM foods and infertility, accelerated aging, dysfunctional insulin regulation, changes in major organs in the gastrointestinal system, and immune problems such as asthma, allergies, and inflammation. In July, a report by 8 international experts determined that the flimsy and superficial evaluations of GMOs by both regulators and GM companies systematically overlook the side effects and significantly underestimate the initial signs of diseases like cancer and diseases of the hormonal, immune, nervous, and reproductive system, among others.
You know, you got to remember this. Like this last week, when Obama was out on the road there.
Yeah.
Okay. One of his stops was a hybrid seed company. That's where he gave his speech. Remember?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Hybrid seed. It had pallets in the back there. He was on stage, and the pallet said hybrid seed company. All right, and I mean that's all GMO,
yeah.
All GMO crap. Okay, and this is exactly what he's doing here. This Obama's a freaking murderer.
Mm-hmm.
He's a freaking murderer for crying out loud.
He's just
a hitman for the Monsanto.
For a criminal.
Holy shit.
That's all he is.
That's all he is.
That's why he goes off to Martha's Vineyard on vacation.
He doesn't give a damn. I get this article. I don't know if we'll be able to read it tonight, but he just passed the an amnesty bill.
Yep.
I mean, he just signed it into law. He didn't even go through
Right
before he went on vacation. That's why he went on vacation, because if shit hit the fan, he'll be away. It's just absurd.
All the illegal aliens have been given amnesty.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's just unfreaking believable what this guy is capable of doing. Okay, if GMOs are indeed responsible for massive sickness and death, then the individual who oversaw the FDA policy that facilitated their introduction holds a uniquely infamous role in human history. That person is Michael Taylor. He had been Monsanto's attorney before becoming policy chief at FDA. And soon after, he became Monsanto's vice president and chief lobbyist. This month, Michael Taylor became the senior advisor to the commissioner of the FDA. He is now America's food safety czar.
What a joke.
What have we done? All right. And the milkman cometh.
How long is this article? I think it's close to
Just a few more, but I'm going to tell you to go through it because I got a couple more I want to get to. But just know that this incredible thing has, and go to Birth of a New Earth blog. Birth of a New Earth.
Obama appoints Monsanto's vice president as senior advisor to the commissioner at the FDA.
That's
very
sick. Really sick.
Sick.
All right.
Eat genetically modified food if you can afford not to.
We've got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah.
But this was a critical thing. Aside from the fact that the U.S. has just developed a brand new catastrophic killing machine, Fukushima has begun beyond everything we could have possibly imagined in our worst nightmares. This Fukushima is affecting the Earth in ways that we can't even believe. So here we go. I want you to hear this. This is
audio.
Yeah. An audio, and it's really,
makes the oil spill seem like nothing.
Really sick. I just wanted to make sure this was the right one. Yeah. Hang on 1 second, and I will bring this right up. Oops. Here we go. All right. Here we go.
This is about Fukushima and Japan.
Right. And how bad
it really is.
Really, really are.
Even though the Fukushima nuclear disaster in Japan has disappeared largely from the front...
Some Russian TV. Oh, a little snag here.
Pages of newspapers, at least here in the United States, the crisis still continues and is apparently, in fact, worsening. Here's what a special witness at the Diet, the Japanese parliament, said at the end of July on new radiation measurements.
My team at the Radioisotope Center took it upon ourselves to measure and calculate the total amount of radioactive contamination using all of our expertise on the subject, and found the total amount of leakage to be about 29.6 times the amount of contamination caused by the nuclear bomb dropped on Hiroshima. Assuming the source material to be uranium, we think the total amount of leakage is about 20 times the contamination caused by the Hiroshima bomb.
There were also reports that the ground under the crippled nuclear facility is beginning to crack as the nuclear core is melting down into it, and deadly radioactive steam might be now spewing from those cracks, further hampering efforts to contain the crisis. As one unnamed Fukushima worker emailed to a friend earlier this month, a lot of the cracks came up in the ground. Massive steam is coming up from there. It's too smoggy here. Can't see a thing. It seems like a nuclear reaction is happening underground. Now we are evacuating. Watch out for the direction of wind. So what exactly is going on there? And why the media blackout on this increasingly severe nuclear disaster? Here to offer some answers is Paul Gunter, director of the
Hold on, folks. There's a little snag in the video.
Reactor Oversight Project of Beyond Nuclear. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks again for having us, Tom.
I appreciate your being here. It's a shame, though, that this is just continuing.
160 days now.
Yeah. In fact, that clip that we just played of the guy in the Diet testifying was sent to me by a dear friend of mine who's Japanese and lives in Tokyo. They're really starting to get worried. I mean, this cracks at the plant, radioactive steam coming out of the earth, that sounds an awful lot like, and my knowledge of this is limited to having seen the Jane Fonda movie, but that sounds a lot like the China Syndrome, the core melting down through the earth and hitting the water table.
Right. That's clearly a concern that we've had all along, that we know now that there have been three meltdowns at the reactors at this six-unit site, and...
I apologize for this tape, folks, but it's the only one we got on this.
That the vessel has failed. Now what seems to be the situation is that this corium, this melted reactor core, has burned. Through the concrete floor of the reactor building or buildings, and has now burned into the earth, and reaching groundwater is creating steam. And what the readings we're seeing now suggest that it's off scale for the instrumentation that's being used by workers, which is 10 sieverts per hour. So right now it looks like the
10,000 millisieverts.
It's 1 million millirem. It's 500...
Apologize for this, Dave. There's only about a minute left on it, so hopefully we can... No, unfortunately, it was more than a minute.
So 500 rem is a lethal dose. This is 1,000 rem coming out of these cracks. So we're seeing, you know...
And double than the death rate.
Awful. Just awful. I just don't even know what to say. It's so horrible.
The USNRC, the permissible dose for the public is 100 millirem per year. This is 1 million millirem per hour.
Wow.
So these are lethal doses that are coming up out of the ground. So, you know, they've been looking to contain this accident by building tents over the reactor units, which is kind of ludicrous in and of itself and shows the desperation measures that are now being employed. But now it's coming up out of the ground through cracks around the facility, so the accident is now, you know, clearly much more seriously out of control than they're willing to admit.
It's just into the wild, essentially.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were involved in a NRC, U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, hearing on July 28th of this year, where the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission basically admitted that fuel fragments found over 1.5 miles away from the facility did not come from explosions from the fuel pool, from those spent fuel pools up on top of the reactor buildings that we've been talking about. These were according to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, those fuel fragments were ejected from the reactor cores in those explosions.
Wow.
So
the cores were breached immediately.
That seems to be the concern right now, and you know, we continue to see stories about aerosolized radioactivity turning up on the West Coast. I think the most recent story,
Los Angeles Times,
absolutely,
the headline: radioactive isotope may be from Fukushima detected. It's radioactive,
absolutely, and
sulfur, which is the breakdown product of chlorine.
Yeah, from seawater being poured onto those reactors in those early days,
found in La Jolla, California.
Yes, and so. Again, the problem is that, as we pointed out on our very first interview with you, that the first thing to be controlled in these nuclear accidents is the information. And now, 160 days into this accident, and still worsening, we still see that the information is being withheld. There's an incredible lag time, months before we really understand
the situation. This fellow who testified before the Diet said 20 to 29 times more radiation has been emitted from Fukushima than the Hiroshima bomb. I mean, this horrified the Japanese, made the Japanese press. This was a big deal in Japan. I didn't see it mentioned in a single newspaper in the United States.
Right.
Is the blackout here, there, or in both places?
It's a global nuclear industry that can control the airwaves, the media, and really we're really dependent upon indie media right now, like your program, like what's on the blogs, what's coming up on YouTube. This is where news on Fukushima breaks first.
Wow. Just to clarify, in the last minute we have here, in a China syndrome like we're apparently seeing right now in Fukushima, the nuclear core melts through the reactor vessel, melts through the cement underneath it, melts into the ground. And if it was in, say, Nevada, it would be no big deal. It would end up in the dirt someplace buried forever. But if it hits a water table, it explodes out. Isn't it true that pretty much every nuclear power plant in America, or in the world for that matter, is built right next to water, so there's a low water table because they use it
right.
As a little plant? I mean, isn't this like an inherently insane system?
It's certainly inherently dangerous, and once it's out of control, the consequences are unacceptable. The big concern right now is that we don't really know, because we don't have reliable information on how hot that corium material, that melted core, is. If it's hot enough, it can separate out the elemental forms of water, hydrogen and oxygen, and that creates an underground explosive environment.
Paul, thanks so much for
being with me. Yeah, no nukes.
Yeah, there you go. While the rest of the media ignores Fukushima, we'll keep an eye on it and bring you the latest news on this global tragedy.
There you go, folks. I would be trying to get out of there. Bam.
Jesus, I'd be leaving if I could. Oh, man. Well, we got another interest. Do I have time for two more articles, which are really interesting? Today, came across this article about Egyptians gather outside the Israel embassy and over the recent bombings that have happened, recent incidents. Hang on one second.
Egyptians want Israeli envoy expelled.
Right. Hundreds of Egyptians, this is from Press TV. Hundreds of Egyptians have gathered outside the Israeli embassy in Cairo to protest against the killing of four military personnel in Israeli border attack. Protesters urged the authorities on Friday to expel the Israeli ambassador and sever ties with Tel Aviv in response to the killings. They also condemned Israel's ongoing military attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. Israel has launched massive airstrikes in Gaza and the border area with Egypt since Thursday. After eight Israelis were killed in an attack on an Israeli bus near Eilat, south of Israel near the Egyptian border.
Now, was that the one they thought was maybe a false flag?
Yeah, it's possible, yeah. Retaliation to the airstrike. According to Israeli officials, two other vehicles were also hit nearby, one by a rocket and one by an explosive device. The Israeli airstrikes have so far killed at least 11 Palestinians in Gaza and four in Egypt. There are conflicting reports about how the four military personnel, including an army officer, died, but some reports suggest that they were killed after an Israeli Apache gunship fired a rocket near the Rafah border crossing. And reports say Egypt's army chief, General Sami Anan, had left the capital for Sinai to probe the killings. Israeli and Egyptian forces have been sweeping the area looking for gunmen behind the recent deadly attacks on Israeli soldiers. The Israeli military claimed they had pursued the assailants and killed seven of them. Tel Aviv has accused resistance groups affiliated with Hamas of organizing the attack and has vowed a full force response against the Palestinians in Gaza. And Hamas, however, has strongly dismissed the allegations, saying the group's fighters had nothing to do with the assault and has warned against any act of aggression against the enclave. So, you know, who's who? All we know is the Egyptians have one Israeli envoy expelled. It could probably be a really good idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, so much for that. And we got one more, a little audio here, but Golden Retrieval from Chavez wants his billion back. And we can play that one.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting one. I wanted to hear that.
Yeah. And there's one more here. This is very quick. But the busted Haaretz, which is the Israeli newspaper, scrub story about the Israeli Defense Force impersonating Hamas. Right?
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
Well, naturally, they're going to say they didn't.
No, but actually, they did. They said they did.
Oh.
I mean, they're right here. The story, it's called The Busted Haaretz Scrub Story About IDF Under the Radar Media.
The story of Israeli Defense Force troops impersonating Hamas militants.
Listen to this. By way of deception, thou shalt do war, the official motto of the Mossad.
Yeah, impersonating Hamas militants somehow made it onto the Haaretz news wire. Blacklisted News was able to snag a screen capture before Haaretz purged the story from the site. For proof that the story was in fact a memory hold a la 1984, it says click here.
Well, what I find most interesting is why Haaretz printed the story in the first place, and then obviously why it removed and replaced the story. And he replaced the story with Obama, Gaza war underscores need for immediate media solution. Would notice that the first 16 or so comments are in response to the idea of troops posing as Hamas, and then the remaining comments are those for the Obama article. But let me just see here. Let's see if I this is better. It's on Google, so it's right there. But this happened, and
topic has been moved by the moderator. Okay.
Right,
but
so
you can go and find that.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you can check that out. And there's one more thing we wanted to talk about.
We're going
to
do the video,
the audio portion. And this is pretty important.
Like
I don't know if we have time
minute.
To do it, but we're going to try. It's 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Venezuela's president wants all the country's gold being held in European and American banks returned to Caracas. It would be the largest physical movement of gold in recent history. Hugo Chavez said he's trying to protect his country from the financial woes on both sides of the Atlantic. For more, let's talk now to author and researcher Adrian Salvucci. He's in Buenos Aires for us. Mr. Salvucci, what do you think is driving Chavez to withdraw this huge amount of gold from international banks?
Well, I believe that you have to make a double reading on this. First of all, there's a financial one, and then there's a political one. The financial one is really quite simple, I would imagine. Seeing the way the markets are going, seeing the way the European Union and the United States economy is going, the price of gold is above $1,815 in these last few days. So naturally, Venezuela is the 13th largest holder of gold countries in the world. So they have something like about 154 tons of gold in the Central Bank of Venezuela, and they have a further 211 tons of gold abroad. So they want to bring that into Venezuela. And it does coincide with the fact that Chavez has nationalized all gold mining and so forth in Venezuela. So from the point of view of the financial aspect, I think it's a very shrewd and intelligent move to protect his country's gold assets. There is, however, a political overtone in that he wants to pull out the other financial assets that Venezuela has in the UK, in the US, and in Britain, and push it into what he calls more likable allies, Russia, China, and Brazil, notably.
Certainly a very big statement being made, but in practical terms, we're talking about huge volumes here. Over 200 tons of Venezuelans' gold is currently held overseas. So really, how can this move be executed?
Well, it can be executed, and Venezuela has said very clearly that they would be doing it transitionally and slowly because they want to make sure that the actual goal that they get back is the goal that they originally sent, especially after some rumors that there had been some counterfeiting of certain gold ingots in various, especially in America and other parts of Europe. So I think Chavez wants to make sure that the gold he sent out is the gold he's going to be getting back in his central bank vaults. There is, however, another aspect which I think perhaps Mr. Chavez has not measured the potential risk and consequences, because this is an outright attack on the U.S., on the U.K., and on the European Union as major financial markets, as major areas of safety to keep your gold. Argentina, for example, my country has all its gold in the vaults of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Now, if this could start a run on keeping gold in America, in the European Union, and in the U.K., and in Switzerland, this might have much more dire consequences than Mr. Chavez imagines. Because if we go back in history, in 2002, in November to be exact, Saddam Hussein used his $1 billion per annum oil for food and medicines agreement after the first Gulf War to sell oil. But instead of doing it in dollars, he did it in euros. And that could have created a run on the dollar as no longer being the major currency for the oil market. So that was in November 2002.
Just to clarify this, is the movement of this amount of gold enough to really affect the markets?
As I was saying, it is if it creates a run on the gold market. And the point I wanted to sort of very much stress is that when Iraq did that in 2002, we all remember that in March 2003, Saddam Hussein ran into a little bit of trouble. So very often the reaction can be dire. I say this because what we're seeing in Syria and in Libya, all this regime change epidemic, clearly stress from the NATO countries, the U.S. and Britain notably, will start spreading to Latin America, and this might be a triggering mechanism that might even justify a political move to start regime change throughout Latin America, which would no doubt start with Venezuela. So actions such as this could very well be the triggers for greater geopolitical actions, as Saddam's move in November 2002 was a trigger for his country actually being invaded in March 2003.
Okay, Adrian Salbucci, author and researcher, talking us from Buenos Aires. Many thanks for those thoughts.
Thank you.
Well, we've come right to the end of our show, Leo.
Yeah, and I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight, and we really want to thank
our surprise caller,
Mike Stathis, who from ABA Research.com.
Who called in,
and we are very...
Had some very interesting things to say,
and
it's always great to have a like-minded fellow calling in.
Yeah, and it turned out he happened to be our guest tonight.
Yeah.
One of our guests.
And we want to thank Woody.
And yes, Woody and Pete Wood, and want to thank him for his contribution there on his Woody in the Ring. And want to thank everybody who listened tonight, and hope you can tell your friends if you like the show. Keep on listening,
and have a great night, folks.
Have a great night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.